Kel-Tec launched into 2023 this year with a new addition to their lineup of innovative high-performance firearms. The new Kel-Tec P15 has broken the mold. Compact and maximum firepower generally don't go hand in hand. However, the P15 offers both in a uniquely small package. The P15 is an excellent choice for concealed carry. It offers plenty of dependable firepower to secure your world. This striker fire pistol is the lightest, thinnest, double-stack 9mm handgun on the market. At only 14 ounces, 7/8 inches wide, and a 4-inch barrel, you could say mini, but mighty. The double-stack magazine holds 15 plus 1 total capacity. That's standard. All Kel-Tec firearms are made in the USA and come with a lifetime warranty as the original owner with proof of purchase. Sign up for the Kel-Tec Insider and get a 15% coupon for your next order of gear and accessories. The P15 is an excellent choice if you're looking for concealed carry. Learn more at KelTecWeapons.com. That's K-E-L-T-E-C Weapons.com. Secure your world with Kel-Tec.
There's now talk about a temporary increase in the debt ceiling. What do you think about that?
No, I am a no on that. Yep. I think that, listen, the reality is Joe Biden and Senate Democrats haven't done their homework. If they don't want to work, if they don't want to look at spending, then they need to accept the House Republican position and have a common sense approach to raising the debt ceiling. Anything else is sophomoric, it is comical, and not in the interest of the American people.
Well, no, it's not. It's not in the interest. And he has to negotiate. Biden has to come and negotiate at some point, because he's been leaving all of this for, honestly, it's Chuck Schumer. I mean, I don't believe that Democrat House leadership has in any way actually been helpful on any of this. Not at all. Welcome to the program. Thank heavens it's Friday, TGIF, right? Dana Lesh here with you. You can listen to the show coast to coast on a station near you. And you can also watch the simulcast of the program. You can find us on YouTube, Facebook, channel 347 DirecTV. You can sign up for the email news. I mean, there's like basically a million places to find us. So you can find us at all these places. I want to get into, just from the start, the debt ceiling, because we've talked about it, but I've been seeing some really curious things coming from some folks about the debt ceiling and tax credits and all of this other stuff. There's been a lot of discussion about tax credits, and particularly in this legislation, there's been a lot of discussion about, I think what some of the stuff in there is the EV tax credits. There's tax credits for wind, solar, things like that. I mean, it's kind of, it, and some of this, I will say too, the spending on this was determined with, I have trouble remembering the exact name unless I'm looking at it in my notes, because it doesn't actually reduce the Inflation Reduction Act. It doesn't do it. Yeah, that's what I just said it. There you go. It doesn't actually reduce the inflation. So to understand some of this, the Inflation Reduction Act had included in it all of this like green energy stuff, the spending on it had in the bill spending on wind, solar, EV, et cetera, things like that. But the mechanism for funding it is actually wrapped up in this debt ceiling vote, in this debt ceiling bill. And one of the things that I thought was kind of curious is that, and I saw some Republicans that were arguing back and forth over this as it relates to, we first started talking about this with Big Corn. You guys remember us talking about all of the entitlements and everything in Big Corn, and I always get people from Iowa mad at me. I love you, Iowans, but I mean, this is, you know what it is? It's social engineering through the tax code. That's exactly what it is. It's social engineering through the tax code. And so you've had this, all of these, these subsidies for things like the ethanol and then the EV, et cetera. And the problem is that, in this bill, there have been some Republicans who have been hesitant they don't want to cut those, especially, some in those areas like, Nancy Mace does not want to cut, some of the solar. She doesn't want to. I mean, I was looking at an interview that she had given, and she was one of those lawmakers who is just really hesitant She wanted to vote against the party's debt limit package unless the House leaders, you know, agreed to some of these changes. She did not. She repealing the tax credits for solar and wind projects, according to roll call, that was a key factor in her plans to vote against it. She was saying that the package, she said it would raise energy costs and all of this other stuff. And she said that, you know, she goes, well, the bill should cut more spending and balance the budget. Well, that's what they're trying to do. I mean, that's the thing. Arguing that somehow it's the same thing as arguing that tax cuts are that it's government spending. To sit here and argue that cutting subsidies for some of these industries is somehow a tax increase. And remember, all of these Republicans had signed this tax pledge, right? And so you have all of these different groups that want to hold them to this tax pledge. Well, there's some funny business going on with the measuring and the scoring of this. And it's a little bit inside baseball, but I want to make you aware of it because some of these Republicans are really trying to virtue signal on this. I don't understand how you can claim to be a conservative or claim to be responsible with taxpayer money while you're simultaneously arguing for, you know, subsidies for this. I mean, this is, again, I understand because I've seen the argument come from other people that, well, Dana, you know, this is, you know, ultimately this is already passed. I mean, the green program with regards to, you know, the solar and the wind and all of this other stuff that was in the Inflation Reduction Act, you know, all of this, that was already it was already in that bill. It was already wrapped up in there. That's fine. I'm not contesting that. I am contesting the funding mechanism. That's like saying, you know, if Republicans really, why would Nancy Mace say, you know what, and why don't we just cut funding for, you know, I don't know, the IRS, the 87,000 agents and the increased funding that was all wrapped up in the IRA and the Inflation Reduction Act. But the funding mechanism is coming through with this debt ceiling vote. So, I mean, you could easily attach something on there and say, well, we're going to defund the IRS so that we can help balance the budget better and we're not spending all of this money. That's the thing, like the tax credits for all of this. Why is it that you have to increase taxes on some people, but yet you have these green, and the EV market would not be sustainable without government handouts. Let's be very clear about that. Consumer behavior does not support it on its own organically. These are absolutely indisputable facts. Someone's love of EVs doesn't change the fact, doesn't make it magically less true. It doesn't. That's the reality of the situation. And yeah, nor would our grid, as Kane notes, be able to handle all of this. I mean, it's crazy. All of this stuff has persisted for so long. All of this, you know, with these green energy tax credits, and it used to be Democrats that didn't want to let it go. And now you got some Republicans that are arguing. I think it's a dodge for some of them to say, well, we want to make sure that we don't cut these because it's going to raise taxes if we cut these credits. No, what raises taxes is the incessant government spending. The cronyism is cutting the cronyism is just that, cutting the cronyism. You also need to cut the spending. I mean, it's asinine. So this is one of the things we're going to be following because I saw a piece from The Hill. I saw a piece too from The Wall Street Journal. I'm going to pull this up. The Wall Street Journal, this was their headline, which made me get mad about all of this. Republicans effectively voted to raise taxes and they're fine with that. That's how they're putting it. So a lot of these Republicans, like these more flaccid Republicans that are wanting this tax credit and they want this cronyism, their talking point that really kind of worked in tandem with Democrats stuck. So we're going to talk about all of this here coming up more in depth. Also, what else do we have? So that's the debt deal. The White House is suggesting that there's probably a short term deal coming. And we'll see how all of that goes. But I'm mad over it because I don't see there. I mean, rarely do you see an industry that is so unbelievably babied that as this one, right? Except for maybe big corn. I mean, honestly, because it is big corn is so babied. But that's just it's frustrating. And I saw this piece. There was a piece that was from Reuters. Solar and EV firms say that Republicans' debt limit stunt's going to cost jobs. Now they're like, oh, you're going to cost all kinds of jobs. It's going to be so bad. Can you believe that you guys are doing? Because you propped up an industry. I mean, this is cronyism. You propped up an entire industry that couldn't function on its own without, you know, the crutch of government accommodations. I mean, that's just the reality of it. I mean, I don't know how anyone is arguing from a perspective that this is in any way like a free market action to have it like this. This is what frustrates me so bad about this conversation. So we're going to talk about this, like I said, in depth here coming up more, because it's the narrative that is being stuck. I'm telling you, they're going to come and try to use it. And it's going to something that you're going to see. Democrats are going to come back to this. So I'm just telling you, that's what you're that's what's going to happen. Now, as far as, I got to pull this one up. So John Fetterman, you know, he's kind of had a little bit of a rough time. So John Fetterman says that, you know, he's been going through hell and it's all your fault. Well, I mean, kind of. He also blames, who does he blame? Oz. He says it's all Oz's fault, too. He said it was an interview with KDKA, a CBS affiliate. He says he's doing better after he checked himself into Walter Reed. But he also said that, you know, it was the brutality of the campaign in the other side. Some people believe it was one of the most vicious campaigns, is what he said. So he's blaming the campaign, and I mean, really blaming all of you, and saying that this whole situation was because you guys, everybody was so mean. Everybody was so, you know, critical, because that's kind of like how elections work. I guess he expected that he was just going to be handed the position. I don't know. Well, I guess he did. But he was saying that that's where his depression came from, that it was a very brutal campaign. He goes, the answer is very blunt. He says he was saying that he was fit, and he was saying that, well, I just, you know, it was the brutality of the campaign is how he put it. Listen to this, because this is the audio from his interview. This is John Fetterman, who's doing interviews now. I mean, he's back doing interviews. Listen to this.
You've said that your toughest time was after you got elected to the Senate, which most people would think, hey, that should have been one of the great moments of his life. But that's when your world started to collapse. Can you explain that struggle and explain it to people who may not understand when it's happening to someone they love?
Yeah, no, that's what's so insidious about the depression. The depression, you know, you might win, and you still feels like you lose, you know.
Oh, that wasn't the soundbite I was looking for, but, you know, anyway. So, yeah, I wanted the part where he's like, yeah, it's the brutal campaign. So I didn't even care to play that. That's what he's blaming on. He's blaming it on, oh, it's just, you know, he was saying that it was the campaign, and it was really the other side. It was the most brutal. Some say it was the most brutal. Is that what he said? Or the most vicious of political campaigns. And I love how, I mean, because I don't know how you can say that he's not blaming his political opponent when he's literally saying, well, it was the brutality of the campaign and the other side. Like, how are you? That's kind of him blaming it, isn't it? That has been the dodge that I've seen. So I don't know. I'm just telling you, it's kind of, you know, it's a little wild. All right. So some of the other stuff that we are following as well, if you get the newsletter that I sent out, the Substack newsletter has the radio prep and all of that in there. I've got some wokery for you. We also have the Soros-backed prosecutor, Kim Gardner. She is out. She is now. Do you honestly, Kane is St. Louis too. You really believe that anybody better than Kim Gardner is going to step in that role? Be honest.
Anyone better? You mean any Democrat better?
Yeah.
No,
it's going to be like Kim Gardner 2.0, right?
Yeah, it totally will be.
Yeah. Except I don't think, I do think fewer people will pay attention, because they'll think, oh, it's all done. It's all said and done. Kim Gardner's out. So we don't need to. I do think there's going to be some apathy. Yeah. We're going to talk about this coming up as well. AOC and Eric Adams are fighting over, because remember yesterday we talked about the case of Jordan Neely, and then you had Mayor Eric Adams who came out and said that AOC shouldn't have called the Marine a murderer. You know, you have to wait for the investigation to play out. And she's now mad at him, and she's throwing hands back. So we've got all of that as well. We're going to get into... I've got some interesting headlines. That's all I'm going to say. I have some exciting news for those of you who wish you could be nearer to Hillsdale College. Now, you can be a part of Hillsdale, no matter where you are in the world. In addition to their free online courses, Hillsdale College has created something new, the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. It allows you to learn even more from Hillsdale anywhere at any time. And on the Hillsdale College Podcast Network, you'll hear podcasts that feature conversations with Hillsdale College faculty, staff, friends, alumni, as well as visiting speakers and authors discussing everything from philosophy to theology to history, economics, politics, and current events. Listen to hundreds of episodes on the network, from the Hillsdale Dialogues to the radio-free Hillsdale Hour to the Larry Arnn Show, all for free. Get informed and entertained at Dana4Hillsdale.com. That's Dana4Hillsdale.com, and learn more about their free online courses and the new Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That's Dana4Hillsdale.com. Hillsdale College, developing minds, changing hearts.
Will Republicans miss another layup? New polls show 40% of Republicans don't want Trump to run, but he's still leading in the polls. Has the new Republican strategy become leaning to the left on certain issues? How should Republicans approach this primary strategy with an easy path to the White House? Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So here is a headline. I'm just going to tell you how I have it down on this rundown. It says caps lock. No one cares is what I have this listed as. Here's the headline. It might be mean. Governor Sununu is also going to make his decision on 2024 by late June. So for all of you who've been on tenterhooks waiting for Governor John Sununu or Chris Sununu, whatever, the Nepo baby, to make his announcement. For everyone who's been so excited on the edge of their seat, it's coming at the end of June. Oh my gosh. That's for the Sununu stands. There's nobody out there. Nobody's out there. I feel like that one dude from Seinfeld and Jurassic Park. See, he's running. He's run. Nobody cares. See, nobody cares. A swarm of bees. This is like the second time this week there's been some bee issues. They latched onto a wing and delayed a flight for 4 hours at the Houston airport. This was on Wednesday. It was at Delta Airlines. They all latched onto this wing on the plane of a Delta Airline flight, and they delayed everything for 4 hours. The staff was trying to figure out. A passenger live tweeted it. Please tell me, I think they did get beekeepers, because if you got pest control on there, I will pest control you. We need to protect our honeybees. I will fight you over a bee. But they said someone approached it with a hose, and they had a whole, I mean, the wing was covered. So the bees left when they turned the engine on, but I can't even believe, get a bee, you know what? I'm sorry, but our importance of our honeybees are greater than you getting on that flight. I so believe that. Stick with us. We got more in store.
YouTube, Facebook, or DirecTV. If you're looking for the number one afternoon host in the country, you've found her. Download the podcast every day to catch up. The Dana Show.
This guy that was clearly behind Jordan, he can't say self-defense. He was not at risk. So to let this go forward in any way is to sanction vigilantism in this city, and therefore would have national ramifications. We cannot let this go. We will support whatever the homeless advocates are doing, because this is really giving legitimacy to those that can say, I can get up on a subway if somebody's making noise and do what I want to do, including causing their death. This cannot happen. This cannot be allowed.
So this is what we're building up to. Calling self-defense vigilantism. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. Your lovable curmudgeon bottom of this first hour. That was, you know, that was Al Sharpton on MSNBC. And the case of Jordan Neely, if you've noticed, it hasn't popped off as much, I think, as the left wanted, just because of all of the aspects of this case that are involved. The national press wanted to do a really good job. They were really working overtime to try to hide the fact that this guy was violent and that he had been screaming threats at other passengers. And by the way, it was more than just the Marine that stepped up. There were black passengers that also stepped up. And furthermore, there are a couple of posts online with photos from like a year ago from social media users, black and white, who had taken a picture of this guy warning other people that he was dangerous. And these are surfacing now. These aren't just like rando accounts. I mean, the posts are like from a year ago, and they're black people and white people. And they're taking pictures saying this guy here at whatever, you know, station, this guy is super dangerous, be careful, etc. Like warning other people. These are now coming to light. So they act like, oh, this was this Jordan Neely guy. He was just there crying for food, and he was just yelling, and somebody just decided to attack him. No, he was threatening people. He was actually screaming and threatening people. He had a felony warrant out for his arrest because he punched somebody. He also punched a 67-year-old woman in the face. He tried pushing people on train tracks before that. They forget all of this. No one's sitting here saying that he was just simply yelling. He was doing a hell of a lot more than that. But because Al Sharpton and all the people promoting this are awful racists, they immediately want to make it out to be about, oh, well, it was the white Marine. That's who it was. It was the white Marine. And it was because he was white and Jordan Neely's black. I mean, that's shameful. I told you the story yesterday of the guy, Tommy Bailey. This is from Unsafe Streets, and they chronicle, you know, a lot of this. And they are really critical of the way that the national press and the left has been trying to manipulate this narrative. You know, they said that, you know, the media is trying to portray him as being, you know, like this innocent, just Michael Jackson impersonator. And they exclude all of his arrests, all of the violence, all of the fear that people had of him. I mean, there's the story, too, of Tommy Bailey. And this guy, he was a dad who was stabbed in the neck at a subway. It was a subway station. He was a father of three. This is like the exact same situation as the Jordan Neely case, except this guy, well, he got stabbed. 43-year-old Alvin Charles. This story was back just last October. 43-year-old Alvin Charles had been charged with murder. He stabbed Tommy Bailey to death near the Atlantic Avenue subway station in New York, 9 p.m. Friday. The 43-year-old father, it stabbed him in his neck, and then Alvin Bailey, the guy who was, you know, there being violent, had a violent history, he fled. Officers found the father bleeding in the subway station. He was pronounced dead at Brookdale Hospital. They said he was a hardworking man, and he worked some late hours, and he was coming home from work. He didn't bother anybody. He went to work each day. He did his thing. And see, what ended up happening is that this isn't the first time. He had stepped up. One report said he stepped up because this guy was attacking a police officer there that was on the subway, and the dad stepped in, and then he was stabbed. This dad also had to step in before, a year prior, because there was a girl who was being savagely attacked on the subway, and he had to step in and defend her. By the way, there's been 6 homicides in the past year on the subway system. Just like this. Just like this. And that's the thing we talked about yesterday, too. You know, people didn't know if this guy had a knife. Do you know how many times people have been stabbed to death there by the, I mean, all of them, by the way, are like that. I mean, we've talked about them in headlines. They are ignoring this, and they perpetuate this issue. This is self-defense isn't vigilanteism. But see, that's the whole point of all of this. They're trying to rewire your thinking into believing that you don't have the right to defend yourself, or you should be worried about defending yourself. They had on CNN this absolute moron. I don't know where this broad went to school. Jillian Snyder. She said that she's like, you know, the Marine didn't know that he had had arrests. She's like, how does that factor into this? She said, you know, that shouldn't factor into his death. Oh, my gosh. But here's what she's missing. It's completely irrelevant to his behavior then at the time. And it excludes all of the other passengers who stepped up, too. This guy was loud enough and threatening enough that so many people felt that their personal safety was in question that a number of them stood up. Because while the Marine had him in the chokehold, he was not the only one there holding him. There was also a black passenger who was there holding him, too. Which, by the way, that's the reason you didn't hear about Tommy Bailey. The press didn't talk about Tommy Bailey because he's a black father. Black victims, the media treats them as though they are of no consequence if it's in a situation like this. Don't get mad, they do. But, oh, they could go after this Marine. They're ignoring the other people involved. There was a, looks like a Hispanic man, and there was a black passenger there. And then there was a, I think there was another passenger who was standing behind the Marine. That guy was thrashing about. Enough people felt that their lives were in danger, that they needed to do something. So the whole issue of, you know, his priors was irrelevant because we're talking about his behavior right then, right at that moment. And so this is about trying to diminish self-defense by recasting it as vigilantism. That's exactly the whole point. And they're really working hard to try to do that. I told you how you had, let me pull this up, this AOC and the New York City mayor fighting now. They're fighting with each other because, see, AOC came out and said that this Marine was a murderer. The New York City mayor said, no, can we let this stuff, I mean, he actually got one right. He said, no, let's wait and have this play. You can't just come out and call someone a murderer. And now she's mad. She, because one of the things Jordan Neely shouted, and by the way, there is some video of this. He was threatening to hurt people on the train, like verbally screaming it. He was screaming threats. And he was apparently like physically attempting to do it. This was because Adams said AOC hit back at Adams. And she tweeted out, let me pull this up. She tweeted this out yesterday, quote, "It's appalling how so many take advantage of headlines on crime for an obsolete, tough-on-crime political media and budgetary gain." What is this? Is she just throwing words out there to make herself sound smart? This is moronic. She goes, "But when a public murder..." What the hell's public murder? I can't even get through this whole sentence. Every time she tweets, I lose brain cells for reading it because the stupidity has the exact same effect as alcohol. She says, "When a public murder happens that reinforces existing power structures..." Those say, oh my gosh, I can't even read it. Do you know what? Every time she tweets, it sounds like she's a college freshman who got it thesaurus and is trying to do two things at once. Sound smart with words that she doesn't understand and also try to make up the word count by just throwing a number of words in there. That's what it sounds like. Oh my gosh, what is public murder? It reinforces existing power structures. What does that even mean? There's just law and order. You absolute dits. There's just law and order. I can say that because I'm a woman. Kane can't say it because we have a double standard in this society, but she is. I mean, he legit tried to kill. He tried to push a woman, like, I think it was 2 weeks ago. He tried to push her in front of a train. He tried to shove her on the tracks. That wasn't the first time. I had made mention in my piece, and I know others have said this point as well. Everyone's so concerned about Neely's life right now, but they weren't apparently concerned enough about it before to do something and intervene. Isn't that about right, though? Like, these people are never actually there when people need help. They show up later to grift off it. That's the whole thing. And they're using this also as a way, if they can't go after your guns, then maybe they can go after the principle of self-defense. Self-defense has been under attack for quite some time. Like, you know, we had the case of the... you know, our hometown in St. Louis, the case of, I can't remember their names now. The couple that had the guns that were standing out. Yeah, the McCluskeys that had their guns and they were standing out. I can't tell you how many times I'd explained this to people, how it was considered private property because it was a gated historic community. We lived down the road from it in near Lafayette Square. It was this, it was near the Science Center off of 40. It was this old historic. Like that, a lot of these houses they built back during the Golden Age, and they had a lot of like the richest rich of the St. Louisans at the time, including like children of beer barons. They built these. The houses are amazing. They are really gorgeous. When I first got into journalism, I had to do a profile piece on someone who lived in one of these houses, and I showed up in my little, you know, I literally was right out of college, and I was driving like a clunker. And pulled up in front of this mansion. It's a beautiful street, but it's gated. And it's all private property to the extent that they have to pay literally for the street's upkeep, the sidewalks. The city doesn't pay for any of it. It's like the old, it's weird. It's like it's they have their own, they control their own property to that extent. I mean, they have their own everything. So it and it's well known in the area, and it's gated. And they had people who literally broke the gate and trespassed on their property. They don't have, it's not an easement. Like the sidewalk is their property. There's very different legal implications for that all that neighborhood because it runs that way. And that's why that case, those people should have been prosecuted. And it's actually a travesty of law that they weren't. But my point is that now that you understand how this wasn't just people walking down a city street, like they actually, it would be the same thing as if you have a gated backyard. It's the same thing as them coming into your backyard. And that they broke the fence and they were on video shouting threats that you could hear. And they were defending. They walked out and they were defending themselves. They were entirely within their right, regardless of their trigger discipline. They were entirely in their right to do so. But it was viewed as being too aggressive. They were the ones who were viewed as being the aggressive ones and wrong. Not the people who literally broke an iron gate. I mean, the whole thing had to be replaced. And trespassed walking onto some on their property. People kept saying, well, we're on the sidewalk. Again, it didn't matter because that's not considered an easement there. They have to pay for the sidewalk and street in front of their respective homes with their own money. No joke. They have to pour the cut. They have to do it. The city doesn't do it. So technically it's not. So that's irrelevant. And all these people around the country who didn't know no better were saying the same thing. But see, the prosecutor in St. Louis, everybody else knew. All the politicians knew that truth. And they hid it. This was about criminalizing self-defense. They were within their right. It was technically castle doctrine when that gate was broken. It was discipline that they didn't. It's about self-defense being turned into vigilantism. They are not the same thing. Black Rifle Coffee Company set out on a mission to make the best cup of coffee that's ever hit your mug. And I think they've hit that mission straight on. Their dream has been to sell enough premium coffee to build a support network for veterans, first responders, and law enforcement. And thanks to your support, that dream has come true. Black Rifle Coffee is roasted by a veteran-led team of brilliant coffee graders who work tirelessly to roast and bag the highest quality coffee here in America. And the coffee is truly one of a kind and my favorite. Your support has helped Black Rifle Coffee Company expand their team of active duty service members, veterans, and veteran family members. And they were able to donate over 120,000 bags of coffee to veterans and first responders in 2022. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana and use my code Dana at checkout for 20% off your purchase and your first coffee club order. That's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. Use code Dana and also look for Black Rifle Coffee in grocery and convenience stores. Black Rifle Coffee, America's coffee.
Catch the Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
And you know, when I speak with small business owners and entrepreneurs, some of our younger small business owners actually self-identify as entrepreneurs. They're small business owners also. But we'll go with whatever you like. Small business owner, entrepreneurs.
What is that? What? Oh my gosh. I don't know, guys. Welcome back to the show. It's the Vice President of the United States. I don't know what that means, but okay. We'll go with whatever you like. That's the thing. Just go along to get along, isn't it? We'll just go along with whatever popular thing is that you like. It's just, you know, whatever you want. It's what we'll do. Golly. You know, it's almost like there've already been a writer's strike with her this whole time. I mean, we're dealing with the WGA strike, the Writers Guild of America. I think they've already been striking her with her, like this whole time.
We have AI. Why doesn't she just use AI? For crying out loud.
You know what? She's actually someone for whom AI would be a major improvement.
Right.
Would be a major improvement.
Isn't she the czar now for AI?
Oh my gosh, that's right. She's the czar for AI. We've got to talk about this. Can we also talk about woke Lego? Like actual literal plastic blocks. I mean, why do you need to get woke? Are you going to imagine that your blocks have different bits and that they put together differently? I don't know. By the way, if it's non-binary, then why can you only switch your sex to be either a dude or a chick? I don't know. Stick with us.
They say we're not going to increase the debt that every president has done for the last 6 million years here. Never hadn't done anything but that.
What? The next 6 million? Is this his AI thing?
That's our president, everybody.
Welcome back to the program. Top of this second hour with you this Friday, Dana Lash, your lovable curmudgeon. So it's Friday, so it's a little bit, you know, a little bit more relaxed. And so we were kind of laughing about Kamala Harris being named as the AI czar. So, you know, the czar of artificial intelligence. They said she's going to make sure that the technology is developed responsibly. Do you believe that she's going to be able to do that? She did such a great job as the borders are, you know. I mean, it's no issue there. She did such a great job. We are going to get murked by robots. That's what's going to happen. We are going to get killed to death by robots in the next like 6 months if her work as AI czar is anything like being the borders are. Oh my gosh. To death.
They'll kill us so hard, we'll die to death.
We're gonna go into Matrix hell. So I'm gonna delete it probably after the show, but I did the free trial on ChatGPT because I wanted to see what it's like. And Kane is my grandmother. I think he's possessed by her. He's like, did you go ahead and download the Satan? Download that demonic device, the Satan device? ChatGPT is the devil.
I'm not wrong.
I'm not going to say I'm listening to. I wanted to ask it. This is what I asked it. I said, write a short summary of what it is like to be unburdened by what has been in the style of Kamala Harris.
Oh, please read it.
Well, it's it writes, quote, being unburdened by what has been can be a liberating experience. I have to perfect her voice. It allows us to move forward without the weight of past mistakes or regrets holding us back. It's an opportunity to unburden and start anew with an unburdened perspective, a fresh perspective, a renewed sense of purpose.
Maybe she has been using AI.
Is she AI? I mean, I'm just
maybe
like wondering.
Maybe she has been.
Yeah, it's a little terrifying. So, and Steve asked her, or asked ChatGPT, same difference. Draft a speech by Vice President Kamala Harris in which she talks about restaurants and entrepreneurship. Can you play that soundbite real quick that we just played for today in these United States last segment? Because this is what we got the idea from, you know, because she is the AI czar.
Got it.
Yeah, yeah, this is what she said. So just where we got the idea.
And, you know, when I speak with small business owners and entrepreneurs, some of our younger small business owners actually self-identify as entrepreneurs. They're small business owners also. But we'll go with whatever you like. Small business owner or entrepreneurs.
Okay, just go along to get along. So Steve asked it, draft a speech by Vice President Kamala Harris in which she talks about restaurants and entrepreneurship.
Did not disappoint. She goes, I'll say that.
Oh yeah, no, it's good. Good evening, everyone. I'm delighted to be here with you today to talk about my two favorite things, restaurants and entrepreneurship, which is spelled wrong. As we emerge from the pandemic, we're reminded of the resilience and determination of the American people, particularly those in the restaurant industry that they shut down. She says that, well, this is ChatGPT. Throughout the pandemic, restaurants have been the heart of our communities, providing a place for us to gather, share a meal, connect, blah, blah, blah. She talks about entrepreneurship, or the ChatGPT thing does. We must also support our restaurants by promoting diversity, equity, and inclusion. The restaurant industry has the potential to be catalyst for change, and we must ensure that it's a welcoming and inclusive place for all. Steve wants to ask ChatGPT to have in the style of Elizabeth Warren explain her ancestry.
On it right now.
He was thinking, I just can't even imagine what that is going to be like. Oh my gosh. My first prompt was in the style of Kamala Harris, explain, compose a text about why you love McDonald's. She's like, as a lifelong Californian, I've always been a fan of the Golden Arches. I'm like, what does that even have to do with it? Oh my gosh, it's too funny. It can't, it's terrifying. This thing is actually terrifying. It really is. I don't really actually, yeah. It is. It's like demonic. It's I don't know. It's weird. So my youngest son, he's like, he goes, well, if the devil's going to be on earth, I think it's AI. Mm-hmm. That's what he said. He goes, it's totally AI.
Absolutely right.
That's weird. I mean, think about it. It's like the worst aspects of humanity, but without the morality, it's all logic. Because see, even logic, like if you go back to when I was in college, I remember learning about Peter Singer and having to read his books. And he was, he talked about ethics and logic, etc. And ultimately what I learned is that sometimes what is right is not logical. Sometimes what is good is not logical. But there is no sort of algorithm to infuse that knowledge into AI. AI is going to make a decision or a policy or hold a position based on what is logical and what makes sense, what is mathematically correct, etc. And sometimes good and true don't necessarily fit. And that's the problem. That's kind of like what Singer believes. Like that there were certain things that certain scenarios that he would discuss and that I would read in these books in class. And they weren't right. Sometimes they would result in the death of an innocent person. But if it was for the benefit of all, well, then that's, of course, that's the end. That is the proper end. So it was one of those things that all the means are justified if it promotes and accomplishes the main goal in the end. That's a terrifying, terrifying, terrifying concept. But that's the reality of this. I mean, a sterile, completely... For the most descriptive sense, very sterile, clinical, soulless logic that doesn't recognize nor value morals or ethics. That's terrifying. Absolutely terrifying.
On that note, your Elizabeth Warren speech is in
the Rural Times. Oh my gosh.
I've been reading it.
Oh my gosh. So he asked it. Write a speech in the style of Elizabeth Warren in which she talks about her Native American heritage and being a public school teacher. Oh, boy. It is so bad.
You have time.
Okay, I do. So Elizabeth Warren in ChatGPT on being an American Indian states, quote, "My fellow Americans, I stand before you today as a proud Native American and a former public school teacher. My heritage and my experience in the classroom has shaped who I am and have driven me to fight for the values that matter most to all Americans. Growing up, my family instilled in me a deep respect for our Native American heritage."
Come on. Come on.
Oh my gosh. I want to ask it, come up with a clam chowder recipe for Powwow Chow Part 2. Just to see. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. That's so bad. That's so bad. But this is, it's actually kind of, it's terrifying and it's.
Go to the last paragraph. Just read the last paragraph of the Elizabeth Warren.
Of the Elizabeth Warren,
just the last paragraph.
As ChatGPT.
Yes.
Oh boy. "So today I stand before you as a proud Native American and a former public school teacher.
Come on.
Ready to fight for the values that matter most to all Americans. I believe that we can build a better future for ourselves and our children, one where every person has the opportunity to succeed and where our diverse backgrounds and experiences are celebrated and not denigrated." Well, they were denigrated because you're a fake.
Yeah.
You blonde-haired, blue-eyed person. I mean, not that there's anything wrong with having blonde hair, blue eyes, but she literally... filled out American Indian on her Harvard job application. Oh my gosh.
Are you arguing with the robot right now?
I am totally arguing with the robot. You are damn right I am. See, this is the problem. Then you're in like this cyclical thing of arguing with robots. Man, that thing is actually terrifying. Okay, can we, I need to talk about woke Legos for a minute because I hate everything. Here's where we are. So Lego has launched a gender neutral range in what they say is a bid to break stereotypes. Okay, your plastic blocks. Ooh. I'm really confused as to why they would need to announce anything, but okay. But that's, I mean, they're plastic blocks. I don't know what that means. So they said that, so this is, it's really big in Australia. So this is where it's like first, because it first hit a couple of years ago, but it's like really, apparently they're introducing this now in like Australia. So it's making news again. They're Danish. And they've already pledged to remove gender bias from their toys. I don't even understand what gender bias is. I mean, have you seen the Lego people? I can't tell you the chick from the dude. You know why? Because they're yellow blocks. Okay. They don't even have like genitals. Not that, I mean, it shouldn't even matter, but you know, whatever. Your minifigs don't have genitals because they're minifigs. And your minifig doesn't have a minifig. Anyway, they actually never expanded on what they're going to modify. They're just like, yeah, we're going to gender focus, you know, whatever. And so now they've been pushing this. Daily Mail has the story. They've launched it in Australia. They have, here's the name of the collection. Lego Dreams.
Z's?
Yeah. Lego Dreams. Dreamzzz. And it's going to include a Pegasus. Why do you need to say Pegasus horse? Stop it. A blue and pink bunny called Bunchu and a nightmare shark ship. And none of this looks like anything I would want to play with as a chick. It all looks kind of dumb. The Juan has some of it in the simulcast if you're watching. Is the bunny is the kooky little thing with the, it has wings. Like, what would you even do with this? Now, I'm going to say the nightmare shark ship looks kind of cool. Like, looks kind of cool. But you don't have to be like, oh, we got to put some pink on this or some blue on this. Let's put some yellow and blue and pink to make it more. Just stop with it because then it just looks stupid, right? Nobody's going to, if you're going to have a cool looking shark ship, you're not going to make it pink and all that. You know why? Because it's a shark ship, you morons. You're going to try to make it look like the color of the sky. You're going to try to make it look like the color of the water. I mean, is this also something that's going to be able to traverse sky through water, like, seamlessly? I just think that you would want to make it look like that instead of trying to virtue signal so hard about bits and pieces that you're going to put colors like pink on it. It's so stupid. That's like having pink camo, which I don't think is dumb. If you like it, that's fine. But, you know, I don't know. I just, the whole thing, but it's called Lego Dreams is... And it's going to have gender. They have a show. They're going to be launching a TV show in Australia May 15th. And it's going to have gender inclusive characters. I don't even know what that means. Why? This is so goofy. And I honestly, I don't know why they think, who decided to make these things and call it non-binary or call it gender neutral? The bunny just looks stupid. I wouldn't play with that. It looks dumb. I love Legos as a kid. I wouldn't play. That's stupid. I don't.
When grown up playing Legos, and even with my kids growing up playing Legos, there was a lot of imagination that went into this, mm-hmm. right? So I think this whole gender neutral crowd, their imagination can then imagine that these blocks are gender neutral. Why do we have to have the company do all this? To me, it doesn't make any sense.
If everything you make looks like Pepto-Bismol, and Easter eggs, it looks stupid. Stop it. I can't. It's so dumb.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Mm-hmm. All right, so first up, the North Carolina House has approved a measure banning, this is from the Hill, banning abortions after 12 weeks of pregnancy. This falls below the 15-week, I think it's the 15-week, average as to where when you poll even Democrats, when you poll both of them, that they kind of land on. It came yesterday. The House vote came a day after Republicans in both of the legislative chambers announced they reached an agreement. The state's current limit is at 20. Now they're moving to 12. So we'll see, you know, if that goes through. Also, half in the United States are worrying about the safety of their money in banks. Yeah, I mean, mean, the turbulence, this is, I mean, I just keep thinking of the central system. 48% of U.S. adults say they're concerned about their money. 19% are very worried. 29% are moderately worried. 30% say they're not too worried. 20% not worried at all. This is a Gallup survey that was conducted between April 3rd through the 25th, a month after the SVB and Signature Bank collapses. And this now, you have like the First Republic Bank. There are others that are being considered as well. We have a lot more. I didn't mean to be short here, but we went a little long with the fun with ChatGPT in the first segment. We have a lot more on the way. Stick with us.
To catch up on all the headlines and crazy wokery, download the Dana Show podcast and get Dana's perspective on the Dana Show.
You know, I think we've got a lot of work to do. I'm doing a major press conference this afternoon, so I love you all, but I'd like to ask you to leave so we can get down to business.
Mr. President, Russia has alleged that the drone attack over the Kremlin was that the U.S. was
behind. I'll be happy to talk to you about that, but not now.
Mr. President, yesterday here, there's nobody talking about the dangers of AI. What are the dangers you see, sir, and did you hear anything from the executives that assuaged your concerns?
There are dangers. We'll get a chance to talk about all those things, I promise.
Like when?
You said a press conference?
Like when, though?
Prepared for the lifting of Title 42.
Reporters trying to sneak in.
Yeah, and John King was like, yeah, that's news to us that we got that's kind of news to us. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you, bottom of the second hour. You can follow along, listen to the simulcast across the country, listen to the radio show, listen to the simulcast, stream it as well, Channel 347 DirecTV. That was just a little bit ago. And Biden was saying, yeah, well, you know, we're going to have a press conference. You got to go. Do you think, you know, like, do you know what press conferences are? I'm just, you know, you know what those are, right? Like, we know what they are. That's not what it is when you're kicking people out in the least. Goodness. I had to play that because that was funny. And it did, even, you know, like I said, even some of the reporters like at CNN and elsewhere were, oh, that's not really how it works. Wait a second here. Wait a second. Now, the rhetoric on the Jordan Neely case continues. We told you about this case the other day, and we were explaining some of the stuff behind it. Y'all remember Jamal Bowman. He was the guy who got into it with Thomas Massie and the Capitol. Audio summed by 12. So he was saying, oh, here are the things that could have been done. Because everyone's like, oh, well, what else could have been done? I don't know. You tell me what else. And people are getting stabbed in the damn subway, you know, and you have this, you know, you have repeat offenders out because of recidivism. Y'all aren't doing your jobs. You tell me what it could have been done different. This is what Representative Jamal Bowman says should have been done. You know, the evil Marine. Audio somebody 12.
And I couldn't help but think of the like 10 other things that could have been done before this person decided to wrap his arms around Mr. Neely's neck and choke him to death. The entire world saw it. The entire world saw him be choked to death. It's on video. So let the DA do his investigation.
Okay, so what are the 10 things? I actually thought he was going to articulate that. He didn't. He just said there are 10 other. What were they? Yeah. He never actually said. Yeah, he's like, oh, you know, there's 10 other things that could have been. You tell me what you're going to do. A guy who's pushed people onto train tracks. A guy who already had a felony warrant out for assault. He's punched elderly women in the face. He's had 44 priors. Super violent. He was threatening. According to eyewitnesses, he was threatening people. And they thought he was dangerous enough. This Marine thought he was dangerous. And it wasn't just the Marine either. Other people there at the subway felt that this guy was a threat to their personal safety. Jamal Bowman's like, well, you know, 10 things could have been done. I'm not going to tell you a single damn one of them. But 10 other things, you know, could have been done. I just don't know what they are. What were they? What could he have done? What could he have done? What? Nothing. These people got nothing. Oh, he cares. He cares so much. Oh, if he cares so much, then where was he up to this point? Where were any of these fools up to this point? You know, here's a whole other situation. It's very similar to this. This is a horrible story. This story came out. This is in Arizona. Just came out yesterday. A 22-year-old convicted felon chased a 29-year-old esthetician through barbed wire and stabbed her 15 times in the chest and the back on a hiking trail in Arizona. He had previously been fired from a job for being aggressive to females. The premeditated attack was linked to the scene by DNA evidence. They discovered her body on the trail. They think that she was actually chased through a barbed wire fence. Now, I know this is important to the left because that's, you know, it's what it's all about. They always have to figure in race. It was a white female and a black male. Now, that's important to the left because they ignored the fact that you had minority passengers who were also helping this Marine deal with Jordan Neely. But they immediately were like, oh, my gosh, the Marine's white. Jordan Neely's black. Immediately, it's because he's a racist. They immediately gave the benefit of the doubt to the violent repeat offender and not the Marine who has no record except that of service to his country. The affidavit in this case in Arizona, this poor woman, Zion Teasley, he was captured on surveillance footage following 29-year-old Lauren Hike for some time on April 28th. And he had been fired from his job prior because he was aggressive to females and he was stealing. It's just horrible. Horrible, horrible. They found his DNA on a shoe that she had discarded as she was trying to get over the barbed wire fence. And they tracked him down because, you know, he had his previous felonies. So they had DNA samples. He had been released from prison just in November. He was sentenced to 3 years. He pled guilty to robbery with a deadly weapon, disorderly conduct, etc. And he had dropped out of the Marines. He couldn't even complete the stint. He dropped out of the Marines boot camp after just 4 months. And the victim, 15 stab wounds to her upper body. She had defensive wounds all over her hands. Horrific. Chase this woman. She died terrified. And he apparently, according to officers, they had said that he had been terminated prior. Again, from his job, he was aggressive towards female employees. Phone data placed him in the same area as the victim. When he was arrested by officers, the murderer told police, quote, "There's no way I'm here for a sex crime. I haven't been with anyone for a long time." And then during his interview, he spoke up about his internal struggle with his sexuality. I don't know. And he said that he had been walking to a nearby movie theater and he told officers, oh, yeah, he knew her. But then he just, I mean, it was just wild. I mean, the interview answers that he gave were crazy. I'm just wondering, you know, because where's everybody caring for her? Or where is everyone caring for the family of the dad who had been stabbed prior to this? This is what, a year ago, maybe a year ago? The guy who had been the father of three who had been killed. Again, on a subway, Tommy Bailey, union steamfitter, father of three, at the subway, saw a homeless man harassing a New York City police officer, told the man to stop, and he got stabbed to death. But nobody cared about Tommy Bailey. Nobody cared about him. I don't know. They said that Alvin Bragg is reviewing the case, and we talked about this yesterday. Alvin Bragg's reviewing the case. And he might be bringing, you know, I don't know. I hope this, if he does press charges, I hope the Marine is able to get a good lawyer. He might have to have some assistance. But what gets me are all these people. This is why we talked to Tim Kennedy yesterday, who teaches how to do rear naked choke. I mean, I put a photo up. I sent out to our subscribers the interview that we did yesterday, and I put a photo up of Tim leading a class. You could see elderly women in there, men. I mean, everybody of all ages, and how to do, you know, a choke. And all these I love all these people who are like, well, he didn't have to hold him for this. Did you watch the video of how he was thrashing about forever? I mean, clearly he was not being held so tight, at least in the beginning there, that because he was thrashing about and still trying to. And there were other people that had to assist this Marine with this guy. Like, here's the thing. don't sit here and bitch about the guy who had to defend himself because the state failed him. Don't bitch about the guy who felt that his life and other people's lives were in immediate danger. And because the city keeps releasing people like Jordan Neely over and over and over again, these are the guys that you target. You make it their responsibility. They are what? That he owes society. He's supposed to bear the burden of potentially being attacked because you don't want to hurt this violent offender's feelings. All of these other people on the train are supposed to wonder if today's the day they're going to get stabbed like Tommy Bailey because y'all don't want to hurt this violent offender's feelings. And there were people in the comments too. Well, he didn't have to. You know what? I don't give a rat's ass how long I'm going to hold you. If I think that you are a danger to me and you're telling me you're going to kill me and, you know, and apparently a lot of people knew who this dude was. I told you earlier, it's all over the web. I mean, it's all over social media. People have been taking photos of him and posting them as warnings to other people for over a year. People who frequented that subway station knew this dude. Everyone always wants to rush in and assume. They always want to act like, no, we're the voice of reason. No, you're not. You're the turd in the punch bowl. There's a difference. Well, he shouldn't have held him that long. Well, pray tell, you tell us how long it takes to hold someone. You don't know if they got drugs in their system. I mean, apparently there was a report of previous use. You have no idea what they got in their system. You have no idea. If you F-A, you will F-O. That is the end of it. I am tired of responsible citizens having the burden placed on them after the state failed to do its job. The same damn people that tell you you don't need guns won't lift a finger to help protect you. They won't keep violent criminals off the streets. Hell, they half the time, they don't even prosecute them. Kim Gardner in St. Louis. You realize that 3/4 of those cases, that woman would not prosecute these cases because she was having a tantrum with St. Louis Police Department? Asinine. Oh no, but it's the fault of the innocent. The innocent had to deal with this. So it's their fault. It's their responsibility. And they're the bad guys if they have to do, consequently, the job that the state failed to do. Self-defense isn't vigilantism, but I tell you what, you keep pushing this failed state nonsense by refusing to force the laws and refusing to prosecute violent offenders and throwing the full instead of barely minimum mandatory at these violent offenders, you damn will get vigilantism. And you won't get anyone, you won't have a jury to convict these people either. You keep pushing that. That's what you'll get. I'm tired of it always being, it's like blaming the rape victim for her skirt being too short. Stop putting people in bad positions because of your crap policy and then coming down on them when they have to act to defend themselves because you promised that you would. They pay tax dollars for you to do this, to serve this purpose, and you didn't do it. Kim Gardner was the rogue prosecutor in St. Louis. Or the circuit attorney, really. It's what they call it there. She prosecuted fewer cases, even though homicides surged. In 2020, St. Louis had 264 homicides. That was an over 36% increase in the previous year. It was 3 homicides shy of the highest total in the history of the city of St. Louis. And it was higher on a per capita basis. I mean, it's one of the reasons why St. Louis constantly gets, and don't sit here and be like, well, it's because of the incorporation of the county. Even with that, it still has one of the higher ones. They had 50 homicides. Like, they weren't even halfway through the year in 2021. They already had 50. In 2021, the first week of April, they had 8 homicides. And then you had Kim Gardner. She was on social justice, not law and order. They were charging fewer felonies. She wanted to reduce the number of cases so that she could focus on the more difficult cases for trial. That was her excuse. A lot of violent offenders just walked. There was an investigation that was done by KMOV, the CBS affiliate there. They found that in 2018, prosecutors got guilty verdicts in barely 50% of the cases. Gardner's office lost half of the cases it took to trial. And they said that they used to, previously, get 72%. I mean, we're talking violent offenders. Conviction rate plummeted on her watch. They've had 100% turnover in the prosecutor's office since Kim Gardner was there. And she's worse than Marilyn Mosby. Honestly, if you compare Marilyn Mosby's stats out in Baltimore, that rogue prosecutor, Soros-backed, to Kim Gardner, the Soros-backed circuit attorney, her in St. Louis, hers are worse. I mean, she went on trips paid for by activist groups. She was gone every month. I got more on this, too, because she is exactly why you have a high crime in my hometown. People like her, people like Alvin Bragg in Manhattan are some of the reasons why Jordan Neely was out there on the platform terrorizing people. Stop demonizing people who are forced in a position of protecting themselves because the state failed them.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
This is so creepy. Oh. So it's a Florida man, but it's a Tennessee Walmart. So that's why it counts as Florida man. A man is accused of using a lifelike baby doll and a stroller to hide stolen merchandise from a Tennessee Walmart. Madisonville police responded to an area Walmart after reports of a shoplifter running out of the store pushing a baby stroller. Officers tracked him down in a nearby parking lot. When they looked in the stroller, they didn't see a baby. It was a doll. I mean, it's kind of lifelike. I mean, but you look closer and you're like, that's a fake baby. They said that the doll was dressed up as a real baby, and they made a baby bottle for the doll to hold as a disguise. He used the stroller to smuggle merchandise. They found $1,000 worth of stolen items. Now, he lives in Florida. He's been caught stealing from four other Walmart stores in Florida. So he was charged with burglary, theft of property, possession of drug paraphernalia. He should have been probably like also charged with being creepy. And then he was taken into custody because that's so, oh my gosh, it's so. Miami Herald, a nonprofit manager stole $766,000 because she said she was addicted to theft. Oh my gosh, it was from Silver River Mentoring and Instruction. They called police about a fraud case involving their manager. And so these are like youth that have problems in public schools. And so she apparently like was writing herself all these extra paychecks since 2016.
Oh, man.
And she said, well, I was addicted to it, so I kept doing it. She turned herself into Marion County Jail. She faces a charge of felony organized fraud. So she's in a lot of, how addicted to theft? Just pay more in tax. Problem solved right there. See, legal theft. Stay with us. We got more in store. Third hour on the way. Grover Norquist will join us later, too.
Next week, they're already at capacity in their shelters here in these processing centers, but it's expected to get far beyond that. In fact, we have heard estimates north of 10,000 migrants crossing per day. But some things have changed in recent years. Wow. For example, this area behind me has seen thousands of migrants crossing over the Rio Grande every day.
Thousands.
The kind of numbers that would have led to those masses that we saw under the bridge in
That's
Del Rio, Texas, just 2 years ago.
Area.
But now they're getting them out quickly. Buses and buses keep coming by here, taking migrants away.
Jeez, wow. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lashier with you, top of this third hour. That's a major problem, obviously, as what, five out, six out, Title 42, 5 days, 6 days?
Yeah.
Man, it is going to be a nightmare. I can't even, it's going to be so much worse than this. That's MSNBC, like, actually telling you how many people are coming across. Welcome to the program. Welcome back. Dana Lash here with you. And coming up later on, we're going to talk with Grover Norquist, Americans for Tax Reform, about the debt ceiling fight and the green subsidies and all of this other stuff that's in it. But the immigration battle, well, you know, because she's already solved the problem of immigration, they made Kamala Harris. She went from border czar to now she's the AI czar. Because when I think of understanding technology, that's exactly who I think of, is Kamala Harris.
Because when I think of artificial intelligence, I also think of Kamala Harris.
I mean, Kane, she's just unburdening what has been.
Emphasis on the artificial.
The burden of what has been.
Right.
Yeah.
No emphasis on intelligence, but a lot of emphasis on artificial.
Well, I mean, she did such a great job at the border. I mean, isn't that the point? They wanted all these people to come, right? Was that her job?
Bang up job.
Great job there. Did a bang up job. No, we were joking earlier, and then I was thinking about this on break. I'm like, actually, it's not funny at all. This is somewhat terrifying. Because if she does in any way a job as AIs are, as she has at the border, we're all going to get so murked by robots. It's just, I mean... Oh my gosh, nobody's even worried about aliens. You have the government out there going, guys, there's UFOs. Hey, there's UFOs. We got UFOs. We're having the second hearing ever in 50 years on UFOs. No one cares because everything else is going to hell. I mean, you have literal, I said, there. What story was it? What movie was it that I watched? Oh my gosh. I watched it recently and I thought it was going to be kind of dumb, but it wasn't. And it had to, let me pull this up. Oh my God. Freaks of Nature. It was called Freaks of Nature. I think, yes. So Freaks of Nature, it came out like a several years ago and I only just saw it. And you had apparently the viruses that made you have vampirism, a virus that turned you into a zombie that only kept you a zombie if you ate brains. Like if you stopped eating brains and you'd be fine. The vampirism thing, and then apparently, like, everything was treated as, like, a virus. And they were also focused on their disunity and their infighting and everything else that nobody noticed when giant alien spacecraft appeared in the sky, and they began sucking people up. They were literally, the whole town was about to have a giant fight, and aliens showed up. And I've just, like, they literally didn't know. Even when they were in the sky, like, you were watching the movie. And then only right before the aliens started sucking people up, did it, like, zoom out. And then you can see, what is that in the background? But nobody was focused on it because they were all in a giant street fight killing each other. And it was funny because the aliens, at one point, you thought they were good and they weren't. It's from 2015. So if you haven't seen it and I ruined it for you, I don't care. But the... aliens, they can't, at first they seemed like good guys, but they were wanting resources. But the aliens, for whatever reason, had a German accent, and they, for real, and they showed up and they said that, you know, we were just trying to, we separated you guys and put you into different groups because we got here and you guys were going bananas. Like, what is that? Is right now you have the government going, guys, for the first time in our lifetime, they're saying, yeah, there's UFOs out there. We can't explain it. There's some weird stuff. We don't know what's going on. And in the meantime, people are coming across the border and fighting with border agents. And there's drugs and gang violence. And people are getting stabbed on the subway. And it's just, and then you have insurrections at all these different state capitals because they're mad if you don't let us perfect strangers talk to your kids about chopping their bits off. You know, I mean, literally Tim Burton made a film called Frankenweenie and it was about a dog. And now I'm thinking that the title of this has like greater implications than it ever did for just the title of that movie about his dog. So it makes sense. So all of these things are happening. And I mean, you're just trying to figure out, do I have time to go to the store? I need some milk. Do I have time? I just need to get some bread. Do I have time to go to the store before I go? I mean, oh my gosh. Everything is crazy. That, do you see? You know we're supposed to have 4 asteroids? You know that?
I hope so.
No, for real. Listen, hold up. Wait. I have this here. I was hoping, oh yes, I said, could it finally, a bus-sized asteroid. I was going to save this for headlines, but I have it now. A bus-sized asteroid is going to make its way to Earth yesterday. We're already sad. It's supposed to be here yesterday. Never mind. I hate everything. But no, but wait, there's more. There are 3 other large ones.
To follow?
Uh-huh. In the next few days.
Are they bus-sized as well?
I don't know if they're bus-sized.
And is bus-sized big enough?
I mean, I don't know.
Is bus size big enough to bring us what we want?
I mean, a total destruction of the planet. I mean, it's either Jesus or Smod at this point.
Right.
And maybe, or maybe Jesus will be like, Smod, you go. These people are nuts. I mean, I don't know. It was hurtling through space at 8.9 kilometers per second, according to the National Space Agency, NASA. It's I don't know. They said that there's some other asteroids that are going to pass. All they said is that larger asteroids. So I don't know what that means.
Larger than the bus?
Yeah, I guess larger than the bus. I mean, you're telling me. So look, listen. NASA's Planetary Defense System, which we have, it's kind of cool, has discovered over 31,000 asteroids in total. 103 found to be passing Earth closer than the moon in the last year. Cool. None of these? You're telling me out of all of our chances, none? Like, look, you have one job, asteroid. One job. Oh, my gosh. I'm telling you what.
How'd the dinosaurs get it?
Yeah, they got it.
Did they just wish really hard? Or what did they
do? Wish upon a star. Star's getting kind of close. Oh, my heavens. See, we have all, and all of these problems are due to, you know, some of our own, not our side, our own creation. I was telling you a little bit earlier about Kim Gardner. She's the Soros-backed prosecutor. You remember Bill McClellan out of St. Louis?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got to know him when I was first starting out in radio. It was very odd. They had this show. Everyone was very nice. They had this show that they did through the local PBS called Donnybrook.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember the show as a kid because it was older people in suits and they would argue with each other about policy. And I only knew it because, you know, it's just one of those things. And they had asked me when I was first getting started in radio to go on. And Bill McClellan was very nice. I got along with him very well. He's an old school liberal. Like, I don't even know if I'd call him. He says he's an old liberal. But I don't even know because they have gone so bananas. I don't even know that if they include him anymore. He doesn't know where he's, like, homeless ideologically, I think. So he did this piece and about Kim Gardner just, you know, like a month or so ago. And he was talking about how Kim Gardner, you know, how she grew up. And, you know, he was saying, he goes, to an old school liberal like me, he thought that when Kim Gardner was elected, that it seemed like a promising way, right? To look at old problems through a new lens. You can almost hear, it sounds like a sitcom. Because he goes, here was a person, you know, who understood the complexities of life. Perhaps she could see the humanity in us all. He's setting this up for the other shoe. And it was so funny because he said because his aunt had been involved in crime. Her aunt had been involved in crime. When he asked Kim Gardner, and this is the Soros-backed DA that's a prosecutor that's stepping down now in St. Louis. When he asked Gardner if her aunt's experience, you know, in any way influenced her thinking about, you know, crime, criminal justice, she called his question reckless. And then through a spokesperson, she bashed him, saying that, quote, I continue to be disappointed with some in the St. Louis media and their efforts to continually discredit me, my family, and my work. Bill McClellan is just this old school, you know,
journalist.
He's an old school, like, editorialist. Yeah, he's, you know, he's not a progressive. And he was a little bemused by it. You know, he talked about how he was friends with the former narcotics detective who used to buy drugs, you know, made the buys from her aunt, and, you know, and how he knew a lot of these prosecutors. But he had to because he worked in news, right? But he talked about this case. Now, this is what I'm talking about. The cases that drive these crimes, the crime rates in these cities. This was a great case. Like, he was talking about how he gave her the benefit of the doubt for so long. And then he said, the case that really struck me was the shooting death of 7-year-old Xavier Yuzanga in 2019. The shooting occurred when Malik Ross, wearing a bulletproof vest and carrying a Glock, fired at two teens across the street. An errant round killed Xavier, I guess you want to say it. He said Ross then stole money from his employer so he could get out of town. That's what he told police. He knew what he had done, McClellan writes, and he had to leave. He also said he fired in self-defense, although audio from a nearby security camera recorded only one weapon being shot, and the shell casings recovered were only from one weapon. Gardner refused to prosecute, as was her custom. She did not explain her reasoning. Fortunately, the stealing case went to federal court and Ross pled guilty. The federal prosecutor asked the judge, a Clinton appointee, to sentence above the guidelines because the underlying cause of the stealing was the shooting death of a child. Ross's attorney argued the judge should not take into account a crime for which her client has not even been charged. But the judge did, and the guidelines called for 14 months, and the judge gave Ross 10 years. Gardner, he writes, and again, this is an old school liberal in St. Louis, Bill McClellan. He writes, Gardner has continually denounced all criticism against her as racist. She easily won re-election in 2020. And he goes, the once great television show, 60 Minutes, oh my gosh, Bill McClellan is turning into a conservative, did a flattering piece on the embattled prosecutor who stands up to her racist critics. He says, I've talked with my friends in the criminal justice system and they all shrug. He said her followers are passionate. He goes, he said that I long for the bad old days when powerful bosses ran the political parties. A group of such bosses would have had a sit down with Gardner long ago. Oh, my gosh. But he talks about how he lost faith in her and any kind of expectation because she was mad. And by the way, St. Louis City Police, and this is one of it, just one example of all of these cities, Manhattan, New York, all of it. That's a Democrat city, Democrat police chief, Democrat standard operating procedure. And even then, she was so radical. She would fight with them and she would drop half the cases. Guys, we're talking violent, violent repeat offenders. And then you see some of the stuff like the cop that got shot outside of the pawn store at the night of riots in St. Louis. You see all this kind of stuff. This is what's happening. All of these, it is on purpose. You can't tell me that it's not on purpose. I mean, it's all designed to weaken law and order, to encourage a loss of trust in these systems, and to foment chaos. That's what it all is. We have more on the way, because that debt ceiling, we got to have a discussion about that as well. I have some pieces I'm going to throw up for you. I might do like a weekend wrap up. And I'll throw up some pieces for you about this because this is very interesting reading. And again, it's not just Gardner and St. Louis. This is anything.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So the National Transportation Safety Board has released a preliminary report concerning the deadly chocolate factory. This is the weirdest headline I've ever heard. Deadly chocolate factory explosion that occurred in Pennsylvania and West Reading. They said the board's preliminary report indicates that natural gas fueled the March 24th explosion. It was at the R.M. Palmer company. And that's what they kind of suspected from the beginning. But they said that there was no reported spike in gas usage. And they said that there wasn't any work being done on the mains prior to the explosion. So they're still trying to figure out like what the source is. Isn't that weird? Yeah, so they're still looking at, you know, what the potentially what the source could be. So in Northampton, they're spending $20,000 of ARPA money on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle manhole covers in Massachusetts. Of course they are. You know, I mean, priorities. They said that they're giving, it's a $20,000 grant, the Northampton Vibrance Community. And so they're doing the Ninja Turtle manhole covers, $20,000. I mean, I'm sure that somebody could paint those for less than that, right? Like $20,000. Is it a licensing issue? Like, I don't know. Or you could have like generically named turtles. Grover Norquist next.
Between Twitter, Facebook, or any of your social media, there's a lot of information out there. That's why your lovable curmudgeon is here to help you make sense of it all. Live or on demand, The Dana Show.
There's now talk about a temporary increase in the debt ceiling. What do you think about that?
No. I am a no on that. Yep. I think that, listen, the reality is Joe Biden and Senate Democrats haven't done their homework. If they don't want to work, if they don't want to look at spending, then they need to accept the House Republican position and have a common sense approach to raising the debt ceiling. Anything else is sophomoric. It is comical and not in the interest of the American people.
Well, he's not wrong with that. That's Florida Congressman Byron Donalds, who says, no, he is. And just in case there's any confusion, he is a hard no on increasing the debt ceiling, which we're all still, it's still a fight. And I'm so confused by a lot of these headlines that I've been seeing. Welcome back to the program. Like I said earlier, we're going to be talking about this debt ceiling stuff. You can listen to the conversation coast to coast on a radio station near you or watch the simulcast, Channel 347, DirecTV. The simulcast also available YouTube and Facebook as well. Some of these headlines, because the way that government always positions it, like, for instance, a tax cut is somehow costly for the government. And it's just, it's really like conditioning. It's like brainwashing the way that they talk about this. So, I mean, it must be nice to be Grover Norquist and have your own theme song from the Beatles, because Grover Norquist, as you know, is the president of Americans for Tax Reform. And he is the he's the tax man, and he joins us now. Grover, always good to see you. Thanks for joining me.
Dana, good to be with you. Anti-tax man.
Anti-tax man. Yes. Thank you. We're going to have to like modify that song and just hope that no one catches it and like messages us about it. So, Grover, I was looking. So there's two headlines in particular that I get so frustrated, and I wanted you to clarify some of this. So we have like The Hill, who they were talking about plunging tax receipts and raising fears about the debt ceiling because they're trying to figure out, you know, revenue and tax cuts and the tax credits and everything else. And there was this weird piece that is over. I'm going to pull this up. There's this weird piece at The Wall Street Journal, which is blaming Republicans for voting to raise taxes when it's been Republicans that have been trying to push back against big corn, most Republicans, I should say, big corn and green subsidies. Explain this to me, because they're getting so much heat from this Wall Street Journal piece and Roll Call and others.
Okay. Well, Rubin, who wrote the piece, actually did an okay piece. If you read the article, it's fairly correct. The headline is incorrect. It suggests Republicans are at peace with tax increases. The Republican Party and Speaker of the House McCarthy went to a lot of work to make sure that even though they were repealing a series of green tax credits, which means they were getting rid of tax cuts, which is a tax increase. So that just had to be offset with other tax reductions. It's okay to get rid of tax credits. And they did. One of the ways they did it was they added, let's repeal the 80,000 new IRS agents, because they were mm-hmm. supposed to go out and steal somewhere between $200 and $400 billion. And if we don't hire them, then they won't steal that much money, and that's a tax cut. And it's, the other part is, some of those green tax credits are refundable. A refundable tax cut is spending. It's just spending through the tax code. They write you a check. They don't cut your taxes, they write you a check. And some of them were transferable. So you can take your tax credit, which you thought was tax reduction, and sell it to somebody. It's cash. And that's the point that the head of Ways and Means, Smith, pointed out, says, we're looking into this to make sure that we don't count spending as taxes. And he wrote a letter to the Speaker. And Speaker McCarthy wrote a letter back. This is the key thing. He said, we rate this, as we look at it, as revenue neutral now. But if somebody wants to come in and say that some change in the dynamics or how you score things, we will make sure that any final bill we present to the president is revenue neutral, that it is not a tax increase. That is not happening on Republican watch. As McCarthy said, we're Republicans. We don't do tax increases. Since 1994, when 96% of Americans signed the Republicans in Congress signed the Taxpayer Protection Pledge, the Republicans have never allowed a tax increase through if they had control of the House or the Senate. Okay, and for half of the time, they've had both. The only tax increases in the United States of America at the national level since 1990 were when the Democrats have the House and the Senate, and then they get thrown out of office.
I remember that. Yeah, people don't forget. I think people are still shell-shocked from Read My Lips. No new taxes. I think they still are. We're talking with our friend Grover Norquist, who is the president and founder of Americans for Tax Reform, because that's, couldn't they have, and I'm trying to cover all my bases and, you know, ask, you know, any questions that I think that, you know, sure, our audience would want to know. I mean, couldn't they just have added that nuance, added that caveat, like, no, we're not going to be selling these off. We're not going to allow for this, you know, we're not going to have this as being transferable. I mean, I just feel that there's so much that they could have done with this, because I was shocked to see not just the Wall Street Journal piece, but also, you know, there's this thing from Nancy Mace, which really shocked me, because I don't know why Republicans like Nancy Mace. It seems like it's promoting social engineering through the tax code. That's what it seems like with the green tax credits and that. Couldn't they have just like modified that in a way?
Well, first of all, Republicans didn't have any control over that bill. That bill, the way it was passed, the people who agreed to vote for it were so anxious to do something on infrastructure, which is just another word for government spending. I don't know why people melt when you call government spending infrastructure, as if that's what it was. And I'm sorry, but you know, railroads to nowhere are not infrastructure, and you know, the things that people don't use are not infrastructure. One, we should end all corporate subsidies and corporate welfare, and the government taxing certain industries and subsidizing other industries. What do they tax? They tax real industries that provide real energy, and they subsidize energy made out of fairy dust or whatever it is this week, and things that actually don't produce enough energy, so you have to subsidize them. If it was real energy, you don't subsidize nuclear.
Yeah, the EV market wouldn't be without government propping it up with cronyism, ultimately. I mean, there's no way that you would have as many people using it as you do with this. And I know that some of this was I hate the name of this bill, the Inflation Reduction Act. I use air quotes dramatically. But this, I mean, you could theoretically remove, I mean, this is the funding mechanism for it. I mean, you could stranglehold those objectives in that bill by saying, nah, you know what, we're going to defund the IRS until we get some things straightened out. I would like to defund it altogether, but that's a whole other story. But we're going to defund this. We're going to do these things because that could be offset. So that way we wouldn't have to worry about calling like a removal of some of these credits, et cetera. We wouldn't have to worry about that being looked at as like revenue coming into the government. We could offset this by cutting costs elsewhere, like that. I mean, it sounds big, but ultimately I think McCarthy could have done that.
Well, what McCarthy had to do was get 218 votes with only four or five people being able to vote no on the Republican side. So you had people in Republicans in the Northeast, which wanted to revisit the SALT deduction, which is allowing state local governments New York City.
It's one deduction Democrats love.
The Democrats love that tax cut for rich people because it's rich people in blue states being taxed. Death, and it reduces the damage that the mayor of New York and the governor of New York are doing to their own people. And when somebody says, oh, SALT is awful, the answer is you can solve this problem by electing a different mayor and a different governor. You can solve it yourself, New York. You don't need to change federal law to solve this problem. Mm.
Yeah, that's the one that they didn't need to do anything. We're talking with our friend Grover Norquist, Americans for Tax Reform, about the debt ceiling thing, because we were talking about big corn and the green subsidies, because those are, I cannot stand the cronyism and I cannot stand propping up markets that would not ever perform as well naturally without that government involvement. And I just kept going back to the fact that they were trying to define, you know, these removal of these, you know, propping this up, these subsidies essentially as increasing revenue and then trying to like spear all of, I think, you know, every Republican out there as, oh, well, they're just there for tax, therefore increasing taxes. That's what Republicans are doing. Are all tax credits equal? Explain that for us.
Okay. Some tax credits, the part that if you owe it $1,000 and you have a $1,000 tax credit, then you pay nothing. That's a tax credit that reduces your tax burden. If you don't have a job and you have no taxable income and you get a tax credit for $1,000, that's a check to you for $1,000. That's spending. If you go to a company and say, there's a tax cut, but by the way, if you don't have any income, you can sell it to somebody else.
Right.
That's spending. It's pretty easy to divide out. It's just that the government kind of has hid those numbers and not made it very clear. What I think the Republicans, McCarthy, and the Ways and Means Chairman Smith did a very good job of doing was saying, we separate out the part that's spending, we separate the part that would actually raise tax revenue by getting rid of the credits, and then we offset that with other tax cuts. And they said, and if by any way we missed on this by a penny one way or the other, it will be fit. It will not see the light of day if it looks like a tax increase. And that was the Republican Party and Speaker McCarthy and the entire Republican caucus saying, we are still the Republicans that will not raise your taxes. Mm. We may invade small countries we can't pronounce, but we will not raise your taxes. And that's a pretty good start when you're going into an election.
Yeah, it is. The green tax credits, New York Post said that in that are in the Inflation Reduction Act. Of course, this gets into the funding mechanism as we were talking about. It's being estimated to be in $1.2 trillion as a cost to taxpayers.
When they passed it, it was a very small number. This is why we worry about Joint Tax Committee and this Congressional Budget Office. It almost looks like a political misstatement rather than an economic one. They put out these credits and they said, oh, we were surprised at how many people would take free money. Well, I don't know why they were surprised by that, but to pass it, they made it look inexpensive and quote unquote lost revenue to the government. And then when we wanted to get rid of it, they came back and said, no, it's $1 trillion. Come on, guys.
Yeah, how do you take the CBO seriously? Because, I mean, they're sitting here, they're giving you the standard of, okay, well, here's how much this is going to be in this bill, and then it's actually like a frillion times more than what the CBO estimates it at being.
One of the casualties of COVID was the power of the teachers' unions. One of the casualties of this debate over debt ceiling and the green credits is the credibility of the CBO and joint tax. This will help us in the future get better numbers out of the government because we will make them eat the pages that they wrote this stuff on and get different people in there who don't make these kind of mistakes that look like they were politically done.
Last quick question. This is never going to make it to Biden, is it? What McCarthy's
as
promoting?
Written, no, the whole thing. What we will get from Biden is Biden wants more than $1.5 trillion in debt ceiling because he wants to not have to revisit the debt ceiling until after the next election. Okay? That's what he wants to buy. He wants to buy peace between now and then so he can take naps. Now, if he wants that, we can say we need more spending restraint. Now, we may not get it out of the tax credits. We may get it out of other spending, but there will be more spending cut then debt ceiling increase. That is the deal we got of Obama, and we will do at least that well with Biden. And you just saw the Republican House hold together on. I mean, everybody.
I think that shocked them. I think that shocked them because he didn't. I mean, he only won Speaker by a couple of votes. I think him keeping the herding the cats altogether really shocked them.
Yeah, Biden thought that would never happen. He thought he could sit there and hold his hands and say nothing, and now he's got to actually do some homework.
Yeah, he's got to actually negotiate. Unfortunately, I think he's already called a lid. I think he's probably already in Delaware. Who knows? Grover Norquist with Americans for Tax Reform. Good to see you, my friend. Thanks for joining us.
Dana, thank you.
Whether you just want to stay informed or just hear her vent about all the ridiculousness in the world, make sure to download the Dana Show podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
So it makes me mad about these debt ceiling headlines, like the Hill's piece, why plunging tax receipts raise fears about the level of the debt ceiling. And that one piece that I was citing, you know, I disagree with the premise that the CBO is any kind of decent standard of measure in this. Because when this was originally, and I'm looking at, let me pull this up. I mean, originally, you know, I shared with you the New York Post story of how all of the stuff, you have the Inflation Reduction Act, the debt ceiling battle is the funding mechanism for all the garbage that he's got in the Inflation Reduction Act. So when the CBO was measuring the cost of all of this stuff, originally what's being cited is a number far lower than what it actually is. It's like a million times more than what the actual cost was originally determined to be by the CBO per this New York Post piece. I mean, $1.2 trillion over the next decade. I mean, if you want to talk about a tax hike, that's a damn tax hike included in that. And so people like Nancy Mace going out there, as I was saying earlier, and promoting like, oh, no, we have to be able to have these things, etc. We don't want to lose jobs, you know, whatever. OK, I understand what you're saying here, but this is not the way to do it. And it's actually going to cost more. I mean, Ken and I were talking about the CBO. It's garbage in, garbage out. They will measure exactly what you give them for the time that you give them. It's like it's you input and then it calculates on what you input. That's why they will fudge it. That's why Barack Obama fudged it with the Obamacare battle. We had this whole thing over the CBO with that. It was garbage in, garbage out. These are bunk calculations, and they're trying to deceive people into claiming that removing the green subsidies or green tax credits is Republicans committing to a tax hike when it's not. It's kind of disappointing to see some of these. Didn't Heritage go along with this?
I think so.
This is some Nat Con stuff. Why is anybody going along with this? It's going to affect you. All right, today's stupidity came.
Damn it, that's our money.
It's our money.
All right, it'll be Kamala Harris, our VP. This is her talking about great the economy is. Listen to this.
What do you say to Americans everywhere who are concerned about a potential recession this year?
Well, so far, the economy is looking very good in terms of us addressing the concern that people rightly have about the cost of food, the cost of gas, and we've been able to address that in a variety of ways.
But we're addressing the concern that it's not strong. It's good stuff,
it's
Kamala.
Greg Fokker talking about his portfolio and Meet the Parents. It's, you know, my portfolio is strong, you know, fairly strong. Folks, that does it for us this week. Have a great weekend. I will be back with you behind the mic on Monday.